And we're back, episode 49 of the Moto 247 show here. I'm Ezra Henry, joined by Dean Taylor. And Seattle Supercross was last weekend, and it was pretty good. I don't think it was nearly as good as Detroit, but there's still some good motos within both the 250 and 450 class. But I guess to kick this off, 250-wise, another race and another Lawrence win. It's like the same thing on both coasts, like we're talking about last week, you know, Jet and Hunter are making it look really easy, but, you know, back in the West Coast swing this week, and Jet really did make it look easy, had that incident with McAdoo in the heat race, but besides that, it was a pretty smooth race for him. And, yeah, what do you think about Jet's ride? I was just hoping there'd be some more battling in the main event, but unfortunately, there wasn't much.
Yeah, no, Jet was a solid ride. I thought it was really funny, like I said, like what happened in the heat race, you know, and you could tell it really got to him. I don't know if you saw one of like the end shots right before they like ended the broadcast of like Jet like storming back to the truck, and his face was beat red. Like he looked very upset.
Yeah. But even I was waiting for him to say something.
Yeah, like even after he won the main, I couldn't believe like how much he was like shaking his head, and you know, just seemed like he was kind of unhappy with how like the day went, when like you said, it was still like really solid showing, you know, like what'd he come back to in his heat race even after that crash, like second or third, which is pretty unbelievable, you know, like after a pretty scary crash, and just toss right back up and still able to salvage a really good finish in a really short race.
Yeah, he was still right up there, not like it hindered him with the where he was, you know, barely getting in through a transfer spot or whatever, and like he was still right there, and him and McAdoo got up relatively quick, and I was waiting for some fireworks there, like afterwards, like of them, like, you know, when they're entering that whoop section, I thought he was gonna get them or something, but he, you know, just stayed pretty quiet, and especially in the podium too, I thought he was gonna say something, but you know, he didn't, and he looked really pissed off heading back to the semi though. I definitely thought it was gonna, you know, go a different way going into the main event, and him, you know, being a little bit more aggressive, but I don't know, I just kind of caught off guard there, but you know, it's nothing really huge though, which even like I was hoping there would be some other shots from like behind. Like I saw some photos from behind the crash there, but I was hoping there would be like a video where, like a straight on shot to see, because I don't know if like Jet cross jumped over a little bit, but like the more angles I'm looking at, it's almost like he did, but then there's some that, you know, you just can't really tell if it was McAdoo's fault or his, but I don't know. I'm hoping there's some more footage out there in the interweb somewhere.
Right. And it must have been like, too, everybody was kind of, they were probably both almost favoring that left side because it was probably faster, but then like listening to what, like, you know, what some of the guys had to say, like how rutted and like kind of blind those rhythms were, like how rutted they were, like so they were probably favoring that left side because there's probably shallower ruts and made it easier to do that rhythm faster and stuff, and you know, it's just kind of how treacherous they were saying that track was because of like kind of how soft and rutted the dirt and the track was.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it right now, and there's a clear shot of the left side. It was so much smoother there, and yeah, I don't know, just that whole thing caught me off guard, and then after that, I thought McAdoo was going to be up there a little bit more, but I don't, I'm just, it's kind of weird how it seems like the same thing almost every weekend. Just, you know, there might be some battles from Hampshire or McAdoo, and then after that, it's just like Jet walks away with another one. You know, he led 14 laps this weekend, and he's just, you know, making it look like a walk in the park. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that Jet, or not the Jet, the RJ and McAdoo battle was really good, though, like how, like, how RJ came to get Cameron right towards, like, almost the second to last lap, like, just passed him back and took second. That was really cool, and then I love how he said on the podium that he thought it was the last lap when he made, like, that last turn pass, and then, like, I'm like, man, that's hilarious, and then like, they think, like, he did that, and then he's like, oh, crap, I got one more lap, I gotta hold him off, like, you know, that was
really good too.
Yeah, some good podium battles.
The way he used that lapper too, like I was kind of surprised with that. Like I thought he was going to be held up a little bit more by that lapper, but like he really did take advantage of him and just, you know, jetted in there in the inside and made the pass stick. And
yeah,
which is obviously huge. But Another good ride too was Enzo Lopes. He ended up getting fourth on the night. It was kind of quiet. They didn't really talk about him too much in the broadcast, but yeah, he was back there towards or in the beginning of the main event, and ended up catching up to fourth, which you know was a quiet ride when it you know goes to TV or think about just watching what we've saw on the TV, which they miss so much in the broadcast, which I guess they can they can only get so much, but still going back and through, on these results I have pulled up right now, it's like there's a few good guys that put in some really good rides that I don't think they really talked about that much in there.
Yeah, I was keeping an eye on Enzo during that main, and yeah, I was like sawing off there, and I'm like, man, he came from a ways back to get into fourth, and I was thinking like Levi Kitchen, it's his home race, and I think he's been showing some really good speed, which I think I heard that his like rear brake went out during the main, so then he kind of just like settled in like eighth or sixth place or something.
Yep, sixth.
And I was really hoping for more from him and some fire, it's his home race and stuff like that. But, if that is true that his rear brake went out, I guess that's kind of understandable how he maybe just kind of salvage whatever he could get and not try to do anything dangerous.
Yeah, another ride, too, that I was kind of keeping my eye on was Carson Mumford. And he got eighth, so it's like nothing really special. But, like, I don't know, just looking at the results, he did put in a pretty good ride. He was... I think Daniel Blair, I'm pretty sure it was on Race Day Live, or it might have been the broadcast, I don't know. But he was talking about how he's probably, like, a 5-10 guy. And even, like, if he's around there in 10th place, okay, then, you start to worry or whatever. But, like, even getting P8, I think that's pretty good. Like, looking behind him is Oldenburg, then Cole Thompson's right there. And then right in front of Mumford right there is Pierce Brown and Kitchen and Volans, so... I think he's right where he belongs, and he did really good job on his first ride on the Pro Circuit Kawasaki, and good to see him coming out healthy and going into Glendale here in 2 weeks, and hopefully he can keep that momentum going and even possibly get closer to a top five, because he did look pretty good on the new ride there.
Yeah, I think it's probably he's still not 100% coming back from injury, and probably hasn't had like the most time on that bike either, so you should hope like he can get in a good more couple rounds. Hopefully he'll kind of steadily improve until the last race of the season or something, like so he can get comfortable on the bike. Because I even think like watching that Chris Willis, who's another almost in the same boat, like very little time on that bike, like at least he's like a veteran of the sport and he's got that to help him. But I feel like he's been steadily improving on the East Coast on the PC bike,
Yeah, it seems like each week he's getting better. Like, I think he was starting out, like, right around, or outside of the top 10, actually. And now, he's creeping in there to get top fives. Like, he's right there in the bubble of the top five. And, yeah, each race, it seemed like he was getting more comfortable and stuff. And kind of the same situation for Mumford,
I still kind of view Mumford as, like, a really young kid almost, where, like, so he might not have all that years of like dialing in a professional bike and know to go, where to go with his settings and stuff to really get the bike to fit him better more quickly, where Chris Bolos owns a suspension company, so you gotta think he'd kind of be like able to dial on a bike. He would at least be able to dial on a bike more quickly than somebody like Carson. Nothing against Carson, though, he's phenomenal, but just he just doesn't have that experience just yet.
Yeah, and he probably had a I think it just couldn't only imagine it was a little bit harder coming back off of injury and riding different brand or Blos was riding Kawasaki. It wasn't Mitch's Pro Circuit setup, but it was the Bud Kawasaki team, I think, over in Europe for World Supercross last year, and so he had a few rounds on that, and it wasn't too long of being retired and being on the couch and getting called up. But yeah, with Mumford coming back from injury, then not only that, but switching brands and trying to make that whole adjustment. And right now, too, I think he's wanting to do as good as he can, obviously. I don't think that many guys get an opportunity to ride for Mitch. And, when you do, it's like you better make the most of it because I feel so bad for him because the last couple of years, that used to be the powerhouse. It was always... like the top guys are always at PC, and now last couple of years it's like they haven't been winning much, and heck, they can hardly get guys in the track because everyone's like grenading themselves all over the place. So, yeah, really pumped for him to be up there. And hopefully, you know, like you said, but that, you know, as each round goes on, that we can start seeing him go up there. And I think he could be in the top five, just, maybe by, like, the end of the championship or something.
Yeah, that would be really, really cool. Even talking about injuries, you kind of jogged my memory, too. I almost forgot about Styles Robertson and that gnarly crash, man. Like, I haven't seen an update on him yet. Almost imagine, like, a broken collarbone, though, man. That was a pretty heavy spill through the woods.
Yeah, that was definitely awkward. Yeah, the sock, too, was up there, and he was running pretty good, too.
Yeah. Yeah, he was really holding it. Man, you know, so hopefully hopefully he's okay, but I mean, I feel like he's probably clearly not okay. Like, I feel like he's probably not going to be at Glendale.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything, but, you know, fingers crossed, it's nothing really, but yeah, I can only imagine it's something like a collarbone or and hopefully it's not much at all, but it didn't, the way he came down to, like, just, that's really awkward. He almost got, like, body slammed there. It was, yeah. Little weird. I thought McAdoo was honestly gonna get caught up in that. Like, he's lucky he didn't get caught up in, you know, clip Styles and go into the tough block there or whatever. But yeah, and then another guy I wanted to talk about too was Hunter Yoder. He ended up getting 14th on the night, which isn't great by any means at all, but he was up there in the heat race up front there in the heat and the main event, and I think he definitely turned some heads there. He, even though he got 14th, he did put in some really solid laps there up front. Or near the front, which
he's a freaking ripper though, man. Like, I remember seeing his name a lot of amateurs and stuff, man. He's no joke. It's cool. Like I said, it's really cool to see him, like, getting up there and, like, you know, just for me, like, when you see somebody as an amateur, you just hope to see him on a factory bike just to see what they're, you know, what they're capable of if you give them the best, you know.
That's what sucks about, like, so many amateurs. Like, there's a lot of amateurs that have, like, that Team Green support or for him, like, he had that tricked out Geico Honda 150, and you see him coming up and they're ripping, then they end up losing their ride before they go pro or right around that time. Then, like, you just only wish, like, what can they do on, you know, on, let's say, on a star bike or a pro circuit bike or whatever it is, you know. And it's like, because there's some guys that just, you know, get hurt and just have bad luck and they lose their ride, which then they end up coming through and filling in and then, you know, making their way back into the factory efforts and stuff and end up looking really good. And, you know, they get a second chance again, which it's a business, you know, like every other sport pretty much, you know. Like, I know they talk about that in the NFL a lot, how it's, you know, it's no emotions really, just it's strictly business. And the thing about motocross, it's crazy. Like, you know, like the NFL or something like that, they're guys, you know, they're still really young, but they're 21, 22 when they're coming in. Well, these guys are, you know, turning pro at, like, I guess the youngest you can be is 16. So, you know, right around there. And even before then, when they're still, you know, let's say the B or A class where they can lose their ride there. So it's like there's so much pressure on these kids. And we're even talking about it last week in Star Yamaha, you know, where there's so much pressure to perform, and then it makes you wonder about some dudes like Matt LeBlanc, like, what's going on there, you know? He lost his ride was the last year, and then you just really haven't heard much since then.
Yeah, I feel like he's done, from what I've understood, yeah.
Yeah, which is just really unfortunate, because, you know, these kids work their ass off their whole life, and then they get to that point where they're turning pro, and they're going to start making money and, you know, living out their dream. And on the big stage, and then, yeah, it's like, nope. get it snatched away from you.
I mean, it is like that kind of, like, it just shows how hard the sport is. And, you know, even then, those guys that even make a professional run at it, I mean, like, out of those guys, how many guys really come away making good money? I mean, like, I feel like 90% of the people who race motocross, you know, like, probably even more than that, like, they gotta probably still turn around and get a regular job after the end of their career. And, like, my mind always just goes to, like, man, you know, you just spent 10 years of your life going from, like, basically a child into your adulthood, you know, you're 16, 17, 18 years old until, you know, 25, 28 years old, and then you're done, and then you gotta go find a normal job. And it's like, I'm just, my mind always goes like, how do they find like a good paying job after they're basically 30 years old with like no education? That's where my mind always goes. So it's like,
yeah, it's almost like you're set up for failure. Unless, like, to be in the sport, you're like, not always, but most people have a lot of money. And like, it was even funny hearing Chris Kiefer talk about it, how he has like a sprinter van and a trailer set up. He went to, I think it was Freestone. And he was like, you know, making it sound like he was on welfare or something, you know, compared to the other guys with like huge RVs and everything. And they're talking about that in Pulp last weekend. And where it's like, I guess like it depends on who you are. Like there's guys like, what's his face? Sinai. I think he's doing something in real estate maybe or something. But like, this is just, I guess, a random guy that came to mind. But where it's like, is there family and, you know, are they going into the family business and whatever it is? Or, you know, if it's some, you know, where they have to completely, you know, go in and, because a lot of them, like, you know, they have the on-track schooling now, but like, you know, like this is what they've worked for their whole life, and they just kind of blew off high school, and you know, and they're just trying to get to the to Loretto's and all that, and you know, make their dreams happen. Then it's like you're almost set up for failure, because if you are in the MLB or the NBA or NFL or whatever, like you're guaranteed, or not guaranteed anything, but if you're like a halfway decent player, you know, playing, and you have a decently long career, if it's longer to, like I forgot this number, but I was listening to Joe Rogan the other day, and they're talking to this defense end for the Denver Broncos that retired a couple years ago, and he said something, it was something crazy to where like they're like this huge percentage of guys in the NFL don't even make it like 3 years, and that's when you start getting your pension and everything after that, and the benefits and stuff. And but let's say you surpass that 3 years, and then it's like you're almost guaranteed, you know, to have like a nice easy life, I should say. Like there's probably a lot of guys that still get jobs, right? But like you're not hurting for money, so you can kind of, you know, do what you like doing and not really stress about money. Where motocross, it's like unless you're like, let's say Tomac or a guy like Broxson, Tomac, you know, Webb, or the Lawrence brothers, probably, you know, it's gonna be pretty, you know, pretty hard to like bank off your moto money for the rest of your life, you know, when you're retiring, when you're 30, let's say. So yeah, it's definitely sucks. That's what one thing I hate about the sport too, and it's just so brutal too, it, you know, on the body and everything. But
oh yeah, no doubt. Like have you seen like Dean Wilson's knee recently?
Oh my god, I think we were talking about it, it might have been me and Joe here, me and you, and yeah. I was talking about how crazy it was. Then I just saw another picture after that, because I saw, like, there's some huge freaking bump on the left side or something. And then I saw another picture where it's, like, both sides are just completely effed up. I saw that. I think I was eating it, and I was like, made me want to throw up. Like, it was nasty. Like, if you guys haven't seen that yet, like, it's probably on Instagram or something. I don't know. But it's pretty gnarly. and the fact that he says he can't really do left hand corners too, and he's still right there, you know, hovering around the top 10 in the 450 class is pretty gnarly there. You know, he's definitely on it.
Yeah, I mean, and too, like one last thing quickly before like moving on kind of past the money thing, like even just how expensive the sport is in general. Some, I don't even know who, like just some moto family. Like I think I'm friends with the mom on Facebook. I don't even know how I know these people, but anyway, just Michigan motocross related. I just saw somebody made a post about like our District 14 stuff this year, where it's like, it sounds like maybe the sign up cost has maybe gone up. I don't really know. I was just going off of this mom's like venting Facebook post that I read this morning, but that not only that, then it's like, they're making it like, sounds like almost like a new mandatory rule that where everybody's going to have to use transponders from now on too, which is like an additional fee on top of your regular sign-up money. And she like literally ended her post with just saying, okay, we were just basically priced out of racing motocross now, kind of thing, where it's like, you know, motocross has always been a more expensive sport, obviously, but like, and that's like now too, it's like, you know, like I can see the benefits of like implementing the transponders and stuff, but too, it's just like that thing where costs just keep going up and up, you know.
Yeah, but for a local race, really, like, are they just too lazy to do it by hand? Like I obviously see it's going to be a lot easier to to implement that and stuff, or not, or just to run that in general, you know? But, like, if you're just at a local race where there's, you know, not like it's anything special at all, like, that's stupid. That's the first time I'm hearing that. That's...
Well, I mean, it's just, too, it's, like, goes into, like, the almost, like, the staffing issues thing where you hear, like, restaurants can't get waitresses. And then, you know, and it just goes to that thing, too, where it's just, like, that progression of technology making life simpler and taking the place of where you used to need people to help. You know, I can see where it's just, you know, motocross tracks, I think a lot of them, you know, usually it does seem like they're, like, struggling for flaggers and stuff in general. So, I mean, I can see where it kind of takes a little bit of that stress off your shoulders where you need less people to manage a track, which is kind of neat, you know?
Yeah, and like, there's a plus side to that, like, where your times are going to be accurate, unless there's some malfunction or whatever. But, you know, like, the times are going to be accurate, and they're going to be, you know, on the paper. And that's one cool thing when you're looking at that, you know, because when they're scoring it by hand, you don't know crap except for where you finished. But, you know, to see your lap times and all that good jazz. But, you know, I don't know, that sucks. Unless you, like, buy your own transponder, which you're probably going to have to if you go around racing locally, but now. But
I mean, even think about it, I don't really know that much about it, because, like, I know a few of the races I did last year locally, they had, like, it was just, like, a sticker on the back of the number plate that was the transponder, and I don't even remember it really being too much extra, and I think it was almost, like, a one-time thing for, like, it was, like, $10 for that sticker, and I think you were able to reuse it, I think. I don't even know.
That's how it was for cycling, too, and that was, like, 10 years ago. Or what's it, 2023? Yeah, it was, like, 10 years ago, too, when they started that in cycling, where it started off being, like, this ankle band, big bulky thing, which you really didn't notice too much, you know, once you got going. And then they had some sticker on your helmet to where it was, you know, just as thin as paper, pretty much.
Yeah.
And it might have been a couple bucks more, but it wasn't really nothing like bulky like the big moto transponders that, you know, we grew up with.
That was just a Facebook post I saw, and I haven't really researched that much into it, so I don't know. Maybe I'm jumping the gun, and maybe so is she with that post. Like, I don't see it being that much more, but still, it's just like I said, it's just goes along with the pressures of the sport, I guess. I don't know.
It's just crazy that the travel around, too, just in general. Like, I'm, the older I'm getting, too, it's being, you know, just implemented, but just, like, pounded more in my head, like, oh, my God, like, how have these families have done this? Like, you know, like, there's so many families that travel around, and that's all they do is, let's say, go down south to GPF or whatever in the winter and spend, even if they're not down there all winter, let's say they're down there for a week or two and here and there, then they're coming up here and they're racing around here in the summer, and they're, like, constantly go, 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 you know, racing. And it's like, you know how much, like, that even dumb, like, you know, cheap stuff adds up, like, where if you're, and there's multiple kids, let's say, and they're going around, it's like, holy crap, you know. Like, I can't even imagine, like, just doing that. And it just puts it more into perspective of, for these kids growing up, you know, going to all the nationals, like, how much their families sacrifice. Like, it's unreal just to make it around to every race.
Yeah, it's a lot. Like, yeah, my parents, they growing up, and even, like, now that, you know, I kind of do it all pretty much on my own, and I just kind of do it as I want and at the leisurely pace and stuff. Like, you know, I'm looking, Red Bud has a few open practices here the next couple weekends, and I really want to make it out to one, you know, just to go and ride the track and enjoy it and make a day of it. And I'm, like, looking at it, I'm like, man, that's, like, for, you know, from where we live, you know, it's over a four-hour drive, I think, to make it to that track. And I'm, like, wanting to just make a quick day trip of it, you know, to kind of still have, like, a day of my weekend to kind of relax or do stuff around the house. And I'm, same thing, like, thinking how we did it growing up, where we would, you know, leave on a Friday night and spend the whole weekend at the track in the camper. And like I said, all that time that my dad gave up for, it's like, and you and me always talk about, you know, how just busy we are at the age we are, where it's like, you know, any free moment we have outside of work, we're like running around trying to get things done, you know, where it's crazy to think about, like, all the time. And for me, it's just, you know, not now just like wanting to give up one day of my weekend to go ride my dirt bike. I'm like, okay, yeah, like I can still get everything else I need to get done and not fall behind.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm like, I don't know how people can do it, but, you know, it's I guess, you know, if it's something you love doing, and like a lot of these people are just so passionate about it and stuff, and these families too. And I know it's super stressful on the family as a whole normally. Like, you hear all these stories on Facebook and stuff of people that used to race, you know, that I grew up racing with, and the families just saying how stressful it was, you know, traveling around the country and, you know, going from the qualifiers and stuff, all, you know, making their way around. But it just seems like it's, the families always enjoyed it, you know, it was brought everyone close together and stuff. And but yeah, just the, from a cost like side of it, like that stuff, this is so crazy. And it's like the amount you have to work and stuff, and just, I don't know, just imagine working all the overtime just to have your bike, you know, your kid's bike blow up. I'd be losing it. I'd be one of those 50 dads that's absolutely losing it over whatever, like my kid not jumping something. I drove fucking 10 hours here. You're not jumping that double. But yeah, it's just pretty crazy. And that's what it's like. Like, we all want the sport to grow and everything, but it's just like so hard to even get into, you know? Like, there's a lot of people that have dirt bikes and stuff, but that aren't really into it because of everything we just talked about, you know? And it's like not even a really thought in their mind. They're like, well, I'm just going to get my kid a dirt bike and we're going to go ride in the backyard or hit some trails or whatever. But it's like just even going around, let's say the Baja and stuff here, which is pretty close to both of us. It's like, you know, under an hour away. It's like even stuff like that, like, you know, adds up. But diving back into Seattle here, getting into the 450 class, Tomac is back. Pretty cool. I think a lot of people were worried about him, which I didn't. And I think a lot of people were worried, though, but like not that many people had the panic button ready to hit, you know, which not like he still has a good amount of wins this year. And he had a couple off rides, but nothing crazy. Just a little head scratcher, you know, after like Indy and stuff, but still in Detroit, like he was up there making passes, ended up going, you know, dropping down a little bit further. But, you know, in Seattle, he got it done, and, you know, he's that, he's, you know, the co-points leader right now.
Yeah, I don't know if you watched qualifying, but I thought he looked really good in his first qualifying session, then he looked off in the second one, and I was doing, like, my final, like, fantasy pick adjustments, like, after they were done with qualifying, and I almost didn't pick him to win, and then I, like, last second, I'm like, man, like, I feel like maybe, I don't know what happened in that second qualifying session, but he looked good in that first one, so I'm gonna just say screw it, and I picked him to win and stuff, and, like, I had, like, a pretty good night with my fantasy picks. I ended up even getting the wild card correct just because I actually copied my girlfriend's wild card pick, so that was awesome.
What place was that again?
It was for 12th, and it was Josh Hill.
It was Hill. Dang it. I forgot who I picked. I was just thinking about that right now. I'm looking at the results.
Did you pick Cade Clayson, I think?
Oh, yeah, I picked Clayson. I picked him, and I was watching qualifying. I'm like, yeah, he's definitely not going to finish near the top 12. And I think because he had a good result, I picked him because he was right around there last week. And I'm like, how in the heck is Cade up that high? Then I was thinking, I can't think of anyone. I just put him right now, and I was going to change it before the night show. And I totally forgot. Which, where is he at?
He got last.
Fucking Cade. No, but yeah, I was like, there's no way he's going to be up there near 12th again. And I was thinking Hill, but he got 10th, in Detroit, I think. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe Harland or something, but I was going to sit down and reevaluate that after watching qualifying, which I finally did. You know, I normally am not home for qualifying, but I was, and watched, you know, the 450 qualifying sessions too, and kind of just forgot about it. But yeah, Caden, like I wasn't really setting myself up good to, you know, to make some good points that round for fantasy wise. But yeah, he did put a good ride in Detroit though.
So like Josh Hill, like it was because he got 10th at Detroit, but then I was like looking at it, I'm like, well, Dean Wilson and Aaron Plessinger went down, and both of those guys would usually be in front of him, which pushed Josh Hill back to 12th. And I'm like, okay, like that's like easy math right there. And I'm like, yeah. And then it was even like the last lap, I think Hill must have made a mistake or something, and he fell back to from like 11th to 12th. And I was like, oh, thank gosh. Like it was a really cool, exciting finish for my fantasy pick.
It always works the opposite for me. It's like I have no idea who I'm gonna pick. Then I'm like, I go with a guy, And I'm like he's hovering right around that position, whatever it is. And then he's in that position for like 10 minutes. And I'm just absolutely pumped, keeping an eye on that as I'm watching the battle for the lead and stuff, whatever they're, you know, showing on TV. And I look at it, and like the last 2 minutes, like they fall or something, they make a pass or on someone, or they just they bump up or bump down, and it's like I get screwed every time. But I don't know if I would have picked if I would have went through and thought about it again. I don't know if I would have even went with Hill, so I can't say, you know, who I would have went with or anything. But that would have been cool though if Cade could have made it up that far. But I was thinking about Sealy, but I'm like, I don't know, like it's been a while since he raced, and he was like right around the top 10 then. Like he was, I think his average finish was like 9th or something. So I was thinking about him for a wild card spot, but I'm like, I don't think he's going to be up there that far. But then again, who knows?
He definitely shook things up. He definitely made me a little nervous too. Cause I was I thought he did pretty bad in qualifying, but then he kind of surprised me in his heat race.
It seemed like he got a lot better throughout the night. Like I sent you that Snapchat after, I think, the first qualifying session. And he was right there in the B group, and actually Carnell finished in front of him, and I sent you that screenshot. But he ended up surpassing him and qualified, you know, decently. I don't know. I can pull it up right now. He qualified 11th.
No.
It says 11th. What?
There's no way. I don't know.
I'm gonna do some researching right now on this. No, I don't think he's that high. Because I watched him and he wasn't, I don't know. He seemed like he wasn't gelling, you know?
Yeah.
Where is qualifying at? I don't know, but yeah, I'll look this up as we're talking, but yeah, I was thinking about him for a bit, and then. Yeah, just wasn't sure who. Oops, that's LCQ. Here we go, combined qualifying times. Yeah, that's Benny Bloss. Yeah, it said 11th. I'm like, there's no way. Like, he's probably around 20th, I believe. Yep, 18th. P18 in qualifying.
I mean, I guess that's not horrible, but yeah, like from what we're anticipated, like, you know, I was like coming into that, and I was explaining to my girlfriend this week, I'm like, yeah, like Cole Sealy and Jason Anderson, like they used to just battle through 250, so it's like crazy to like watch them line back up now, and then, you know, Jason Anderson's one of the top guys, and for Cole to not be anywhere near, I mean, it's just kind of, it's funny.
Yeah, and he's like right there, got 21st, and it's just crazy. It shows how gnarly the sport is too. Like you think he would, like he's still riding and stuff, did World Supercross last year, and not training or anything or riding like, you know, some of these guys or all these guys are right now that are currently racing, you know, full time. But I don't know, I thought he'd be a little bit further up there, like towards the top 15 or something, right around like even Cartwright was in front of him, and you know, Harlan was up there. Like Harlan still did really good. He got 13th on the night. Which, he's someone that's kind of sneaky quiet, you know? Like, he's not that many people are talking about him, but he's still right there. He got P13, and for the points side of it, he has to be up there. Where's Harlan at? I'm looking this up right now. Harlan is... I can't see. Harlan, 19th, I guess. 19th in the points. Yeah, 10 points down from Ferrandez. But right there with Moran's. Oh, and another rider, I guess. Totally forgot about is Moran's. What do you think about those hole shots? And he led there and didn't really roll over when Chase went to go pass him in the main event. And then ended up getting caught in that tough lock there. That was a little bit of a heartbreak for him there after leading for a good minute or so, you know?
Right, yeah. Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah, it was... really pretty impressive. I'm like, I kind of watch his YouTube videos sometimes just to see what's up, and he's not like my favorite rider, but I was kind of waiting to see for him to post that YouTube video from the weekend to kind of see what his words were about it, because like you said, it was really impressive starts. And I don't know, I'm curious what clicked for him there. And then kind of, like you said, to hear his side of the story, because it didn't really look like Chase hit him. Like you said, it almost just looked like Kevin didn't back down and they maybe got a little close and made him nervous or causing him to go over the berm like that.
Yeah, I thought Chase was there, like, because I didn't watch it until this morning, like, you know, since the race. Like, that's, I saw him, I'm like, did they come together or whatever? And then kind of forgot about it. And then I watched part of it this morning and just the highlights, and it did seem like he just landed and jetted over. Like, he, I don't know if he landed and got caught in a rut or whatever. Like, I definitely want to go and watch that again. But, yeah, like, I thought Chase bumped into him or something, but sucks for him. You know, he was right there, and who knows how long he would have lasted, like, near the front of the pack four. But still, he, you know, got some time on TV and stuff, and, you know, people are talking about him, which is cool. You know, like, just some more privateers up there making a name for themselves, and, you know, end up getting some points in the night. Not, nothing crazy, but finishing in 20th there in front of Seeley and Clayson there. So, you know, doing all right, because I think he's hovers somewhere around there. Like, I think, like, if I'm remembering correctly, he's right around, like, 16, 18th mark, you know? So, somewhere near the back there. But, yeah, he's getting better, and he's kind of a guy that's been, you know, slowly progressing and making some good strides here recently.
Yeah, for sure.
And then the Hill brothers are doing pretty good, too, you know? Like, both of them. Like, we're just talking about Josh in 12th, but, which he has to be getting up there in age.
Yeah.
Too, and then Justin Hill, is, you know, younger there and coming back into the sport, and that's a good story too. Like, he was doing good, and then he just hung the boots up, and he's, you know, he came back this year and he's looking pretty good, and, you know, been getting inside the top 10 now, and got P10 on the night here in Seattle, there in Seattle, and you know, making his way up there towards, you know, guys like Craig and stuff.
Yeah, there's someone like Craig. I don't know if they didn't show it. And I even in Craig's vlog, I watched it today. Like, they didn't get his crash, but he crashed on the first lap in, like, the whoops or something. And he came from 22nd all the way back to 9th.
Yeah, that crash looked gnarly, too. I just saw pictures of him, like, slamming the concrete or plywood or whatever it is. And it looked pretty gnarly. Like, it didn't look like it. It was, like, some tip over or anything at all.
No, and he even said the bike was a little tweaked. I mean, like, that was, especially from where he kind of started at the beginning of the season, like even in this vlog, him and, like, his whole team was, like, really, like, happy with how he rode from, like, crashing, and said the bike's been up and he came, like, all the way back to the top 10, like, pretty wicked.
That's pretty impressive. And yeah, he's right there behind Cincerulo and Plessinger. And I was hoping Plessinger would put in a better ride, and it just seemed like the same thing, you know, just not necessarily getting a really good start. And which is, it's hard, you know, if you're one of these guys like Plessinger and you get an 8th place start, you know, let's say if you get the whole shot or get 2nd or something compared to 8th, and you know, put in the same effort and put in, you know, you show up with the same speed and everything, that's going to be a huge difference, obviously. And it just sucks for him. It seemed like he, even though, like, it was an absolute heartbreak last weekend in Detroit, like, it seemed like he, like, just gained so much confidence and was going to be up there towards the front of the pack some more, and which I'm still, you know, kind of expecting that going from here on out in the championship. But, you know, getting P7 in Seattle there, and another guy I want to talk about, I do, but I don't, is Chase Sexton. Like, oh my gosh, like, it's the same thing every week, and, like, everyone's, like, just hopefully, you know, he gets his poop in the group or whatever, and he doesn't wad up, and it's, like, at the point now, though, when he's leading, and you're sitting there watching, like, at least I find myself, like, just waiting for him to crash. Like, I hope not, most of the time I pick him for my fantasy pick to win. The kid seems really cool, and like, a really good person to root for, and just everything about it, him, like, his style and everything, you know, is just absolutely beautiful to watch on a bike. And then it's like every week now, it's like, okay, he's gonna grenade himself somehow, and he found another way, you know, going across that start straight there and you know, doing a freaking front flip, which is, it's gnarly. It's like, what do you even do at this point? Like, what do you even if you're him, like, how do you even go about it? Like, do you just try to block it out? Do you try to do anything different? Because it's like, what the heck? Like, this has been going on for quite a while now.
Yeah, I don't know, man. And then, like, poor, he's probably at a loss, too, you know? It's just crazy, you know? And, like, so I hear people talking about it and, like, things he could maybe change with the bike setup and stuff. And it's like, man, like, everything, like, everybody lists off is, like, I guarantee you the team's probably tried and thought of and, you know, tried a million different ways to, and, you know, fix whatever's going on. And if it was some sort of a bike issue, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just like I heard somebody say that maybe he's just got way too much confidence in his front end of the bike. Cause it's crazy too. Cause like you said, he keeps having these crashes, but they're all like very similar where he's just like kind of twisting that front end. And I've heard people say that he's got the steering stabilizer on the bike and stuff. And heard, you know, like it's just, I just immediately start going to bike setup stuff where it's like, maybe you could change the front rake angle of the bike or try like different triple clamps or stuff like that to make like the front end more forgiving, or try a different front tire, or I'm even like, man, maybe it's just like a tire pressure thing or something, or the tires folding over or something. Like I don't know.
Yeah, it's like if you're him and the team, it's like, what do you do? Like you said, they probably tried everything in the book, and he's probably trying to do different stuff, like, because it seems like everyone's, like, Ricky and all those guys are saying, well, he has that awesome, you know, intensity and stuff, and he's riding really good when he's pushing it and stuff, and then he gets a 5-second lead, let's say, and then, you know, turns it down a couple notches, and then he screws up. So it's like, okay, do you push harder then, or... Like, yeah. It seems like no matter what.
I think it's like that, like, race mindset thing where, because, like, I, you know, I try to think about it, like, when I've won races in the past, how it's like I try and just keep my headspace kind of clear to where, like, I'm not thinking too much about, like, the win where I would make a mistake or not. Because that's what I really think it is. It's just like he's just thinking too much about the win, where it's like we watched him last week in Detroit having to chase down Aaron Plessinger the whole race. And so he's not thinking about just holding on to the win and not throwing it away. He's just thinking, how do I catch Aaron Plessinger and beat him? You know, so it changes that mindset. So that's like, even as stupid as it sounds, like maybe, like, you know, maybe if he did just focus on like racing the whole race, you know, like really just charging, where it's like, man, I'm thinking of like stupid little games he could play with himself, or it's like maybe just like focusing on his lap time on his pit board that his mechanic's given him and trying to beat it, or even just trying to, as stupid as it sounds, maybe just trying to see how many people he can lap in the entire race. So as soon as he gets up front, just focus on like lapping as many people in the race as possible, you know, or a game like that where it really just takes his mind off of, oh man, I'm in first place, don't throw it away.
It's almost to that point to where, like, even if, cause it kind of sucks now, cause he was up until this week, he still is in the points hunt, but he's, I think, what, like 22 points down? So, like, he's pretty far back. And that penalty in Detroit, like we talked about last week, absolutely screwed him. But even then, that's 7 points. So he'd be 15 points down, which I guess isn't huge right now, but it kind of is still. But, yeah, it's like at the point now that where just how much he's been crashing, it's like even if he tries something that we're, let's say, like, I guess, you know, who am I to give advice? But it's like, even if, let's say, he gets that lead like he had in Seattle, it's like, okay, let's, you know, like what you said, look at the pit board. Just pretend you're at the practice track or something, you know, and if Eli gets by you, I guess deal with it then or whatever. Or no big deal. Take a second, because it's better than, you know, wadding up and getting, you know, fifth on the night or something. But it's at that point, too, where it's like, I remember when I was racing, it's like you crash and then you think about it and then it pisses you off. Then, like, you push harder in some areas, then you're like you tiptoe around some sections that, you know, you're like, oh, I might crash, then you crash again, you know, and it's like, then it gets in your head, and then it's like a domino effect where it just, you know, leads you to just absolutely have a horrible race, which it seems like he's only making, you know, that one mistake, then, you know, he's coming back and not falling multiple times that much. But it's just that one, I don't know. It's like I'm just kind of speechless right now, because kind of been for the last couple of weeks, but like every time it happens again and again, and it's like, okay, what the heck? Because, like, I don't know. I don't think we've seen this that much like, even if you go back in time to, like, when James was racing, like, he was really fast, had that balls-out speed like Sexton has, and he did crash a lot, but, like, I don't know, it was a lot different than how Chase is crashing, you know? So it's definitely strange. I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss for words right now. It sucks. You know, he's right there, and he's clearly the fastest and stuff, and he was right there in the heat race, and it's kind of funny when Cooper got that win in the heat race, he did, you know, looked back at him and did the little finger gun thing, and I don't know, like, I'm a huge Chase fan, and I don't know, Cooper seems all right, but I just kind of had to laugh at that, you know, like, he was, did you watch the press conference after the race there?
No, I didn't.
He's talking about, like, I didn't catch the whole thing, but I just saw this, like, a clip on Instagram of it, and how is, you know, it sounded like he just, like, I don't know, you know, it could have got in his head or something. He was like, and you know, who knows, it might have worked.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and, you know, whatever, just messing around, but, like, I don't know, like, he, you know, the kid is the fastest, hands down the fastest in the class, just can't put it together, and it's crazy that he only has two wins too, and that one, you know, the one win in Detroit, he got docked, so, like, he's getting the points of a fourth place finish, I think it was. So this absolutely sucks right now, and it's like, I'm at the point to where, yeah, I don't know what to say, don't know what to think, don't know what to do for fantasy, I don't know. But
yeah,
it's just crazy.
Well, I was like, I love Ricky's reaction. He's like, oh, let's see the replay. But like, when it happened, I'm just like, well, it's helping my fantasy picks. As bad as it sounds, I was like, well, I picked Eli to win, and this is perfect.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know if I should start going with Eli, because he was my safe pick for a while, and then lately I'm like, I don't know, Sexton, you know, he has that speed, and he's right there, and then, I don't know, just a little bit of a heartbreaker there, but I'm like, I have no idea, like, when that happened, I'm like, no, I was staring at the TV and, like, just pissed off, like, really pissed off, but yeah, I don't know, like, he's not far out, I guess he is kind of far out with 22 points, but the thing is, he's, you know, he's 22 down from both those guys, and I don't think, like, we could have a guy like Plessinger or Barcia be up there in the mix in between those guys as a filler if, like, Chase wins or something, but I don't think it's gonna be much to where, like, even if Chase does win out, you know, Tomac and Cooper most likely gonna be going 2-3 right behind him, you know, so it's gonna be really hard for him to make up almost a full round of points with, what, like, six races to go, so now it's, like, he said he had nothing to lose last weekend, which I was like, I don't know. He's still kind of right there. But after Seattle, I think now he officially has nothing to lose, because now it's like, even if you win out, you're, what's that, 3 points around, 3 times 6 is 18. So you're only making 6 or 18 up, you know, on, if, let's say, Tomac gets second every race from here on out, you know, which he's still mathematically, obviously, in it, but at this point, you're like, it's maybe next year, but it really sucks. You know, he's clearly the fastest guy, and just these weird falls too. Not like he's going balls out trying to catch Tomac and then falling and grenading himself. It's like almost every time it's the same exact thing. But anyway, it's just really strange, and hopefully that doesn't carry over into Glendale. But I guess we'll see. Just, it's almost like you're rooting for him to get a bad start, or not a bad start, but to be near, like, fifth or something, where he has to work his way through the pack so he can stay focused, you know, like, you know, I guess, yeah, if you're a Sexton fan, like, what, Chase, don't get the whole shot, don't get a lead going, you know, like, try to be in it in, you know, the last 5 minutes or so, but don't get a lead and pull away, because that's, you know, it's just more nerve-wracking then, I guess. But I guess going into Glendale, there's a week off here, so I guess it's going to really early to make picks or something, but we can always post those picks later on Instagram or something. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to Glendale. You know, normally we have that round pretty early on in the championship. It's a little bit different this year with them having the Super Bowl there, hosting it in Glendale. So I'm heading back over there for the West Coast swing of it. And, yeah, just probably going to be the same stuff in the 250 class, another boring, you know, Jet Lawrence show with McAdoo and RJ, you know, who knows, they might make it a little bit entertaining with how they are, on the bike, but you know, I don't see anything being different 250 wise and then 450. You know, it's probably gonna be those three guys up front, and we might have a spoiler. It'd be cool to see Anderson or something up there, but you know, I see Barsha and being up there, Craig making a little progress and stuff. Like, he got ninth, and like you said, he you know, was down there and he caught, you know, came and caught up and came through the pack there. So I don't know, it still should be some good racing, and even though that chase is pretty far out of it, there's still two guys tied for the red plate there, for the points lead with the red plate, so I should say. So yeah, there's still some good racing ahead, but I'm just hoping for some better 250 racing, because I remember years where sometimes the 250 racing was a lot better than the 450 racing. So it'd be cool to see that once again, but I don't know about anytime soon unless something crazy happens. But
I mean, Glendale is a triple crown, so, and those have kind of been Jet's Achilles heel. So
did you see him on the podium when Daniel said that? The look at his face, he's like, oh shit. It's crazy how, like, it's like, yeah, the Achilles heel for both the Lawrence brothers, but I guess we'll see. You know, it's at this point now where he has a huge lead, so it's almost more for just entertainment wise. For let's see if this curse or whatever is real, and see if he can't get it done, which I don't see that happening. Because even like last time, like, he caught up to the pack, you know, really quick, even with being pretty far down. And I believe he crashed like twice in that one of those motos or braces, whatever the heck they call those triple crown things. But yeah. So so be some really good racing there, and Sealy has another couple weeks under his belt going into that, and he should be a little bit better and a little bit closer to, I don't know, maybe the top 15 or something. So we'll see how that plays out, and I definitely have to get my fantasy going better. But yeah, you're still hanging up there. You're right around the 1,000 mark, right? 2,000.
Yeah, this past race it put me inside the top 1,000, so I was pretty cool.
Oh, you're inside the top 1,000 though.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You're holding down, you know, the fort for your whole group. Like, your group isn't doing the best necessarily, and yeah, pretty cool to see. You know, it's a lot of us are far down there, so I don't know. Definitely, I have to regroup mentally for this break here, and let's see what I have to do, because I just been picking Sexton. So I don't know, I'll have to reevaluate that and maybe go with my gut, which it used to be Tomac all the time. So we'll see if he comes out swinging again. And
Sexton won one triple crown.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see how it plays out. Like, we'll see if he can stay up for all three main events. So
yeah.
But even then, like, even if he gets like a third or something, I can see him going 3-1-1 or whatever, you know, like those three guys. I can see a lot of different combos going on, but you know, Barsha's up there and I can see him being on the podium and one race or so. But I guess we'll see how this plays out. But yeah, I wrap this up here. Had some good racing, looking forward to Glendale, and hopefully I'm wanting to get, honestly, back out for, like, Atlanta Motor Speedway. I think that'd be so cool to make it out there for around the East Coast. But, look at the dates for that. But, or even Nashville, like, that'd be pretty cool to go to. But, sweet. Well, we'll be back probably not next week, probably the week after that. So we'll be back after Glendale and talking about that. Anyways, peace out, guys.
If you guys are looking to get graphics for your bike, your snowmobile, or even get a helmet wrap, I highly recommend you guys check out Prism Designs. Aaron at Prism does an amazing job. The graphics look so sick, and not only do they look really cool, the quality of those graphics are top-notch too. And I have a set on my pit bike, and man, they look cool. I have that Geico theme going on. And, rest in peace, Geico Honda. Anyways, have that going, and it looks sick, but not only that, but the quality of them is really great, and that's something I was really pumped on, actually, because there's a lot of companies out there that the graphics look really cool, really clean. You know, you can post your picture on Instagram, and the bike looks so sick, but you have a weekend on the bike of doing a couple motos, and they're starting to peel and everything, and that's just really frustrating. And that's the complete opposite with Prism. The quality of them is really great, and they're at an affordable price too, so I highly recommend you guys check out Prism Designs. You can find them on Instagram at Prism_Designs_Company. And then their link to their website is right there in their bio. So definitely recommend you check out Prism. And I'm also really excited to have a brand new grip company on board with us. I want to give a big shout out to Whiskey Throttle Grips. They make grips and apparel, half waffle, and soft compound grips. Go over and check out their Instagram at whiskey_throttle_grips. Go on there, see what they have going on and all their cool grips. And right in their bio is their link to their website. So go check them out on Instagram, hit that follow button, and click that link in the bio.